podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. In a week when there were stories around getting rid of Formula One free practice, the Australian weather seemed to do that for us. Let's get into what happened today. If you weren't up in the early hours of the morning, that's okay. Somebody was. The editor of Autosport.com, Hayden Cobb, joins us back on the podcast today for the Friday edition. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm all good. I've had a couple of coffees and I'm still firing on all cylinders. So yeah, happy to join you this morning.
I had a relatively sociable 5:30 alarm go this morning to watch FP2, and I'll go back and watch FP1 on catch up. But you've been up since very, very early to do all the live coverage. I was noticing today that even in I obviously we're based in the UK English language website, but I noticed that even today, the live text that you and your team do on autosport.com was still doing really well. I was looking at the kind of engagement, I guess, whatever you call it in these digital worlds, but how many people were tuned into that, and it was still really, really high. So even though it's the middle of the night, we're still there providing that service, and the fans were up enjoying it.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, it was a party at that time. Obviously we've got people tuning in all over the world. For some people in time zones, it's perfect for them. Less so, obviously, European-based ones, and even less so for US-based, because it really is sort of the middle of the night for them, or early evening. But no, we had a good time. And to be fair, first practice for the Australian Grand Prix was well worth the watch because of the inevitable sort of washout that was forecasted in FP2.
Well, absolutely. Tell us about free practice one, first of all. That really was in the middle of the night. And obviously, it's a street circuit. It's green. We have some different support series. There was a podcast a couple of days ago, and we talked to the Autosport Young Driver Award winner, Luke Browning, before he got on a plane to fly to Australia and take part in FIA F3, which is on the bill this weekend. Catch that podcast a couple of days ago in your feed. But so yeah, so a different support, bunch of support series in Australia, but still a very green track. Tell us about FP1. What happened?
Yeah, it was your traditional FP1 session in terms of everyone sort of finding their limits. Few lockups here and there. The track was relatively green despite the couple of F2, F3 practice sessions before it. But it was normal as you go until about 20 minutes to go. Both us in the media and the teams, perhaps more pressingly, completely lost to the GPS tracking data system, which sounds boring, but it's quite important because as you may have guessed, it's what the teams use to find out where all the cars are on the track when they perhaps can't see them on the screen. And that helps for traffic, given that you've got cars on quick laps and slow laps during practice and all going at full pelt. And so that meant it literally did become quite dangerous. There were so many sort of near misses of cars that were unsighted or sort of blind to what was around them, because they were expecting their engineers to tell them, Perez behind, approaching like that. Fortunately, they got away with it. There was no major incident, but the race director red flagged the session to do sort of basically a reset of the system. It turns out what triggered it, as our colleagues from Albert Park have since found out, that it was the tyre data tracker that both teams and the media and fans can use and follow that triggered the whole data sort of freeze, and then triggered where they couldn't find them on the track. So thankfully, they solved that, gave it a reset, and we were fine to go nine minutes after. So there was only a brief halt. But the session actually did end slightly early, 4 minutes early, I think, because Logan Sargeant's Williams conked out with an electrical issue, and that ended up ruling him out of the tyre second practice late in the day as the team investigated the issue. But yeah, to end it, sort of first practice, Verstappen was on top from Hamilton by just over 0.4 of a second. And he, again, in the dry running, because it was a fully dry session, he looked very, very strong, sort of what you expect from Red Bull. And Perez was third. I believe from memory, he had his best lap sort of held up by that traffic, as that we talked about. So probably didn't get the cleanest lap in that he would have wanted.
Well, in FP2, Fernando Alonso led the session, followed by Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen. Little meaningful dry running because of the rain arriving at Albert Park. Carlos Sainz initially setting the benchmark times, then Alonso went top on the mediums, but then rain started in the first half of the session. That was challenging conditions. We saw the conditions worsen. People were going off. George Russell tried the intermediates. The Ferrari drivers tried the softs, but it was too wet for those and not wet enough for the intermediates. And so we saw the top 10 times not really changing. Alonso, Leclerc, Verstappen, Russell, Sainz, but kind of meaningless because, well, firstly, Perez in FP2, Perez was on a flyer but got blocked by one of the Alfa Romeos.
Yeah, he had a tough day with traffic, it must be said. Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
All these drivers have forgotten what it's like to race in feeder series. They've all forgotten about F2 and F3, where you haven't got the engineers in your ear every two corners saying, you know, so-and-so, 5 seconds behind, closing speed this. You don't get that in the feeder series. Well, I mean, you could do. They have the GPS data. But now they're all complaining when GPS goes. Like, come on, you know, you used to do this when you're working your way up to Formula One. And so, of course, in FP1, for any new listeners to the podcast, in free practice one, they don't tend to do the quickest times. They don't take the fuel out. They don't tend to do that long run pace to give them an indication of Sunday and what the tire strategies could be. But then, of course, the rain arrived. Now, was the rain forecast and predicted? Because to me, it seemed like the teams were caught out. And this has thrown everything up in the air for qualifying and the race.
It was. So there was rain forecast, but it was one of those, will it pass us over and it'll be a light shower or nothing at all and we can just get on through with it? Or will it be that stuff that gets you wet, soaked through? And it ended up being the stuff that gets you soaked through, which I think is partly what the teams, there's nothing they can do about it when it appears, but they did get out, all of the teams got out early in the session to try and get as much running. As it turns out, yeah, I think it hit about 13 minutes or so into the session. So, and there was no real sort of soft tire or qualifying sims done in that space. So yeah, they are blind in that sense. But again, it's part of what happens when you have practice that goes dry to wet or wet to dry. It's that in between of nobody really gets what they want from it. Started the chat talking about Domenicali wanting to change practice or cut down on practice. Well, the weather did it for us today, really. But no, the team still got laps in. That it was their first time with the 2023 cars in the wet. So they would have had some useful data and knowledge from that for when the rain inevitably returns at some point in the season.
So we know from the dry running that we saw that at least on the fuel loads that were there, that the Red Bulls at least look quick, that the Aston Martins at least look quick. Again, third race of the season and a very different kind of track and four DRS zones as well. But from what we've learned from the writers that will be filing pieces for your website at autosport.com, we think that we've learned that the fast teams are still pretty fast in Australia. Is that fair?
That's totally fair. Yeah, the pecking order is probably not too different to what we've seen from the last couple of races. That's perhaps no surprise given the relatively limited upgrades and turnaround time. But you'd still put Red Bull as the head of the field. Aston Martin looked strong. Ferrari probably were the biggest ones to probably curse the rain hitting when it did, because obviously their biggest problem has been race pace and eating through the tyres too quickly. So a representative FP2 would have been perfect for that long run stints, just to get a grip on the tyres and see what's happening. And then they've obviously not had that, like everyone else, granted, but they may be sort of a bit disappointed by that. But apart from that, the pecking order is largely still the same.
And of course, we saw limited running in free practice too because of the weather. But did we see the teams bolting on any significant new upgrade parts that were notable?
Not in terms of an outright sort of new spec car. It's too early for that. Mercedes themselves actually are today confirmed that their first big upgrade, in fact, won't be ready until the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola in May. They were originally hoping to be make it available sort of Miami or a couple of races before that Imola round. But it turns out that, yeah, it's going to need a bit more work, which is understandable given that they're effectively changing their concept. So from your front runners there, you've got bits and pieces, front new front ring or spec of front wings and things like that. But in terms of, outright new concepts or massive overhauls. It's fairly well contained just because of the times and the constraints within the cost cap that all the teams are facing this year.
Absolutely. All right. Well, look, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a look at the biggest stories that have appeared on the website and autosport.com this week, and also in the subscriber area, the plus area, where our long reads and in-depth analysis go. We'll take a look at what's been making the news and some of the big headline stories. And of course, we'll talk about that story about free practice sessions, perhaps going on a Friday. What was that story all about? We're going to find out next. Stick around. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Let's get into some of the big stories this week. Then we'll get into Stefano Domenicali. He is the CEO of Formula One, and he was talking to somebody, a channel about MotoGP. They happened to throw, it was a curveball or a question, whether they were expecting it. And he happened to mention about free practice in Formula One, that it's really there for the engineers, for the nerds. It gathers data and doesn't do a lot for the fans. And that was kind of reported. And I want to know the truth about this, whether it was, this is what he said or not, that free practice sessions could be going in Formula One, or that would be his wish. What was really behind that story?
Yeah, so Domenicali has since clarified those comments to our friends at Sky Sports after practice and speaking to our colleagues in the paddock as well. And it wasn't necessarily, or he is, whether he's backtracking or not, you can make up your own mind, but it wasn't necessarily a case for getting rid of all practice. It was more of basically increasing or helping in terms of making more competitive sessions for every day of track action or on each day. One of the sort of the ideas that perhaps I don't think will be followed through, but the sort of concept they're going for is say if there's an extra championship point for topping practice, for example, that sort of idea of making it worthwhile rather than just being what it is by tradition and by definition of practice. Teams can run whatever plan and do whatever they want. There's no threat from not making qualifying or being handicapped in the race or anything like that. So they're looking to just to add more competition, add more entertainment, which is perhaps the key word, to each time Formula One is on track. It had a mixed reception, you could say, from the drivers and teams, some for, some against, surprisingly. Verstappen sort of saying, don't want to mess with the DNA of Formula One too much. Whereas others are saying, well, yeah, we're not against the idea, but in terms of cutting down practice, because you have F2, F3 that only have one practice session, whereas Formula One have triple that every single Grand Prix weekend. So in their minds, it was, if you're going to do it, you'd still keep practice as literally practice, so a non-competitive session, but maybe you do cut down here or there, depending on where they are and what's going on the schedules. So there's a few ideas throwing about, but practice is here to stay for now, let's say. It's not going anywhere, don't worry. You still have your FP2 and FP sort of long-run pace analysis that we can look forward to.
Oh, we do. Formula One fans do like a drama if they can pick up on a story and run in the wrong direction with it. Now, talking about what's on the website this week, I always love the comments section. I love the Autosport forums as well, but I do like the comments because I like to see what, you know, the discussion's all about. Some are good. Some are like the internet comment sections that you can imagine. But there was one I saw yesterday which seemed to set the website alight, that the FIA is clamping down on Formula One teams and the pit wall celebrations. And that's one of the bits of Formula One that I hadn't realized I quite liked until I was told that I wasn't going to have it anymore, which I think seemed to be the running theme through the comments, that, well, we're told, no, the teams can't come onto the pit wall and wave their fists in the air and cheer their driver on. Now that's going to be banned. I'm like, well, I want that. I didn't realize I wanted it, but it has to do with leaving their own pit box. There is a regulation in place. It's not a new regulation they're having to put in place to enforce this. It seems a little bit like the fun police, but I kind of get the safety aspect as well. You don't want an engineer falling onto the track or something, but what was this story all about?
I think you got it in a nutshell there.
There we are. I've done it for
it's,
you.
No, it is very much a case of, as you said, spot on. The rule has always, or at least for many, many years, been there in terms of what teams or personnel can and can't do on the pit wall when it's all about safety. And naturally, yeah, if it was anyone else just randomly climbing up the catch fence or through the gaps in the pit wall, they'd be in a lot of trouble. But yeah, it's that moment, I guess, where the rules are relaxed, you could say, when the winning teams, or they know their car's coming in to cross the finish line as the winners, they can celebrate and get, and to be fair, get some like iconic, Christian Horner called them, photos as well, which is always important for many teams for many reasons. And we've seen a lot of that recently. I think almost, anyway, you get every race, but at least the first couple of races, Red Bull have really been going for it from their mechanics, which may be where this is started, when they've seen it and gone, well, that is a bit, maybe it's a bit over the top. I don't know. I'm not sort of criticizing them. I mean, in terms of a safety aspect, there's been, the few of the shots you have seen, basically three quarters of a crew member that's on basically on the track or hovering over it. And yeah, it only takes them to slip like a hand or a foot, and then they fall onto the track, and then sort of a fast car approaching, and they're scrambling. It's not going to be a pretty picture. And then the FIA, as well as the teams, will be in a lot of trouble if that scenario played out. So that's what they're trying to avoid, obviously. I do agree, it is a little bit of the fun police, and the FIA have been accused of that in recent times. We talk about the jewellery and wearing the fireproof underpants, which are all for safety, all for reasons like that. But yeah, it's a difficult one, because rules are rules, and you don't want to see anyone get hurt, and this is a simple way to prevent that. So yeah, I think it'll be perhaps maybe pointed to, or come Sunday at the end of the race, we'll be interested to see who does what with it. But again, these sort of threat of penalties, it's not exactly going to lose someone a race win. It'll probably be a slap on the wrist, a fine, if the FIA think it's gone a bit too far. So even if these rules are in place, it won't really change that much.
Yeah, that was the key thing I looked for. I looked through that article and thought, what's the penalty? Is it a sporting penalty? Would it be a points deduction for the driver or the team? And it would be financial. I think Aston Martin came out today. I think Mike Crack said, actually, we'll abide by the rule. And if anyone did leave the pit area, then they would be fined. And they would have to pay that, because that's, the engineers know the rule now. So, yeah. But also, yeah, you try and take a step back and zoom out 1,000 feet as well. There was a lot of resistance to things like the halo. So, and that saved lives almost instantly.
Exactly. And so, yeah. You're spot on. It's one of those where it's like,
yeah, you can't pick and choose, really, can you? You know, the FIA are going to be a safety led organization.
Yes.
Sort of kind of got to go with, you know.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a rule that has existed. It will always be there. It's a logical one. I guess the whole what has happened, and we are part of the problem, you could say, is because it's been sort of notified and made apparent, and this is a sort of a clamp down, a sort of heightening of the existing rule, that creates this little spiral of outcry, as it were. But don't worry, we'll move on in a couple of weeks' time and find something else to complain about, I'm sure.
There'll be something else. And talking about things online that our audience have been clicking on and interested in, Jonathan Noble also published an article earlier this week on Tuesday called Mercedes Knew the Limits of the W14 Before Bahrain. And that's all to do with something you've mentioned already, which is that, again, I don't want to labour this point, because there seems to be a kind of a lot of stories and podcasts and YouTube videos I watch where people are really laying into this sort of Mercedes story, that they're going to have a change of concept and philosophy. Could it be Silverstone they unveil it for? And a lot of people think that's about the side pods, like the zero side pods idea. But they might stay, actually. It might just be a philosophy in terms of the underside of the car, the aero, how the surfaces work. And so, John, we put that live online, and the audience, they keep clicking on these articles about Mercedes and the aero, the problems and the concept. And can you just fill us in a little bit on where we are with that?
Yeah, so as is well said, well documented, the current concept that Mercedes are with, sort of the zero pod, but also how it interacts with all the other key aerodynamic parts in the car, the wings, the Venturi tunnels, the floor, the diffuser, it hasn't deliver the performance that Mercedes were expecting. Last year, they were massively held back by the porpoising and the rough ride. And once they got that smoothed out, they were unlocking performance. And we saw that, obviously, by Brazil. They won a race on merit as well. So they stuck with the concept, believing that, okay, a winter of development without the issues that they faced first time around should unlock that step that that they thought was there and the data was sort of showing them. But they were going through the wind tunnel and sort of getting close to Bahrain and seeing, they weren't seeing the results they were expecting, which is a bit of a repeat of last year, but just ultimately I think it's proved to them that this model, which they are the only ones that are following this current concept that they're using, just it's quick. It's still quick. Look, Mercedes are still third or second or fourth sort of fastest car out there, but they were only winning championships, so it isn't the fastest concept. So therefore they are, have sort of held their hands up and sort of admitted, right, we're going to change how we build a car, in so many words. We've mentioned earlier about that from Imola, they're looking to do the first major upgrade. And it's all sort of tied into that of they know that what they have now, they can only optimize to a certain level and they have to just completely revise it and redo it. And rather than doing incrementally, we will expect, and that's when this is going to be really interesting to watch, is when this first sort of package arrives, obviously how the performance and how the drivers find it, but like how will that compare to everyone else? What's it going to look like? That visually is the easiest way to indicate of what they've gone for. Will it look a little bit like the Red Bull, or will it look a bit like a Ferrari, say, which would sort of have a slightly different tails, or will they go for something new? Not sure. They have sort of shied away from having similar sort of ideas that are already out there. That's the logical way of going to it. But it will be fascinating to see what comes as and when it arrives.
Well, that is a rundown of Friday action. Then the big stories. Oh, another clarification, which we knew was coming, was if a driver serves a time penalty like Alonso. We saw the debacle really after Saudi Arabia that mechanics can't touch the car whilst they're serving their penalty, which all became about because the rear jack touched the car. But I'm surprised because my interpretation of that was, well, you can't touch the car, you can't get the jack ready, you can't put it on. But the teams were all doing it, so that was how they appealed it. But that's clarified. You know, it's a 5 second time penalty, 10 seconds or whatever time penalty, mechanics can't touch the car, which I thought was obvious, but has now been clarified.
It's true. But now it is. Now it's in black and white.
Stone.
Yeah. Use both
thank you so much.
There.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Thank you very much for that. Our listeners can keep their eyeballs. Now they listen to the podcast with their ears on autosport.com. I wasn't even up in the middle of the night and I'm making no sense now. Thank you very much. Is it going to be the same for you on Saturday and Sunday?
That's right. Yeah. Looking forward to free practice three. At least now we know that they're going to get some, they're going to need to get some more running in, having lost some dry time in free practice two. So yeah, it could be an interesting full free practice three, depending on what the weather does, of course. And then qualifying, it's always good fun. Albert Park's a wonderful circuit, that sort of turn 10, 11, left, right, really quick section that everyone loves. You've got an extra sort of DRS zone, which you mentioned earlier, like super, super quick time. So it's going to be worth watching. Let's put it that way.
Thank you very much for listening to the podcast today, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Podcast Network.